Dick Schwartz is the creator of Internal Family Systems, which is one of the most powerful constructs and tools to help us understand our psyche. And as he did the last time we were on the podcast, we go deep into exploring my own psyche, my own protectors, my manager parts, my exiles, the parts of me that need to find a home, to come home, and to bring me into a greater sense of wholeness, a greater sense of capital S self. And it's a beautiful exploration of my own challenges and some stories from Dick as the creator and one of the leading practitioners in the world as it relates to the combination of psychedelic therapy and internal family systems, which is an unbelievably powerful combination that I've experienced myself. So it's with great honor and tenderness that I offer this vulnerable podcast with Dick Schwartz. Dick, it's a pleasure to have you back on again. I remember we got to go deeply personal in the last episode. And so why not start there? Why not start there again? Really? So because there was a recent incident where I needed a reconciliation with my wife, Ilana. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, you know, some IFS methodology and framework that actually unlocked the possibility for us to reconcile.
Really honored to hear that.
Yeah, it was really powerful. I could feel, so what I could feel is that there was a piece of me that was, you know, because I've stepped into full trust with my wife, like full trust. And then a few incidences happened where I felt like I was acting in good faith, but there was a rupture that was created from it. And what ended up happening that I wasn't aware of, we go into our kind of home-based journey, which is the combination of ketamine and cannabis that we get prescribed. And so we go into our basic journey, and I could feel that there was some part of me, part being a key word, there's a part of me that wasn't willing to actually reconcile with her. So I had the kind of intuition at that point to just name it as a part. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, Vi, look, I have a protector. Mm-hmm. And the protector is here, and it says, it doesn't trust you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't trust you. And then she started talking to, initially she started talking to me and saying like, no, I trust you. And I was like, well, no, I need you to address not me. I need you to address this part.
Cool.
And she's like, all right. And then, you know, she started addressing. I was like, don't address the part until you ask the part what it has to say.
That's great.
You know, so that was the first part. Like she like assumed that she knew what the voice of the part would be. But I was like, no. You know, we're still in the medicine, but just the intuition was flowing through me. I was like, the part needs to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and the part says, I'm not going to go home. I'm going to stay here until I know that Aubrey is safe. Mm-hmm. Until I know that Aubrey is safe, like here I am. Mm-hmm. And so she went through and just listened to that part, listened to what it had said, listened to its, you know, its explanation of why Aubrey had created it and then why it was there and the purpose that it had to keep Aubrey safe, and that she had to convince it, you know, basically to come home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I told her as me, I was like, look, this part's not coming home until you convince it. Mm-hmm. And so it really allowed there to be a connection where I got to say to Vilana, like, look, me, Aubrey, like, I want this part to come home. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to ask it to come home or force it to come home until it's addressed. And it's heard. Mm-hmm. Its voice is heard. Yeah. And what it feels is assuaged. And then I do have the authority to call it home, and it will willingly come home. Mm-hmm. You know, I am the master of all the parts.
Right.
And it will come home, but first it needs to be heard, it needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And we were able to move through it. And it was really beautiful at that final moment where I get to go, all right, you know, he's home.
He's home. Yeah. What a great story.
Yeah. It was really, really profound, actually.
Yeah. And I can imagine that there's a different relationship between that part and her now.
Right.
Than there was before, which makes for more possibilities, right?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And if that part steps forward again, we can name it actually.
Listen to it.
And listen to it and explain like where it is. And it's such a, I think you just mentioned that you recently wrote a new book, We Are the Ones You've Been Waiting For.
You're the one you've been waiting
for. You are the one you've been waiting for. And it's about couples mm-hmm. coming back together. And I think the beautiful thing that I experienced in the couples framework was that it really allowed, instead of me and Vailana to be on other sides, it allowed this part mm-hmm. to be the thing that we had to reconcile. But mm-hmm. like, hey, Vi, like me and you on the same team.
Yeah.
Like, we both want the same thing. We both want the part home.
Right.
However, this has a voice.
Yeah.
And it really allowed this comfort and freedom where, you know, she wasn't saying like, well, why aren't you doing this?
Right.
But the framework of the part itself
yeah.
and the rules of engagement with the part
right.
really allowed us to have a structure for how we move through our rupture.
And the language helps too, because instead of saying, I don't trust you,
right.
you can say, this part doesn't trust you. I trust you.
Exactly.
You got to work out things with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really surprisingly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
In your own, you know, you've had, I'm sure, countless, you know, moments of resolution with partners and friends and family, however.
Mm-hmm.
Do you similarly, you know, practice this mm-hmm. this method when you're having these reconciliation moments?
Yeah, I'm lucky to be married to an IFS therapist.
Oh yeah, so you guys go right into it.
People, get out of here with that part shit, my kids are saying all the time.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, we're talking about our parts all the time. And we haven't taken the step that you guys did, which would be have me talk directly. Well, you know, we're talking directly to our protectors all the time mm. without calling it out. But I'm going to go back and tell Jean I want to talk directly to her part.
Yeah.
In the way that Vi did to yours.
Yeah. Yeah, it was surprisingly helpful. And actually to allow myself the liberty mm-hmm. to actually speak as my part.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. there was a certain freedom
to be the part.
To be the part, to like speak as my part and say, yeah. like, this is what my part's saying.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry, Vi. I'm not saying that.
Right.
You know, this is just my part.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so there was a comfort where she didn't take it personally.
Yeah.
She like understood the genesis of it, where it came from, mm-hmm. why the part, you know, separated mm-hmm. and what its purpose was. And it really allowed us to stay on the same team and then just deal with what was in front of us.
So when you say where it came from, did it disclose where it got its job in the past?
Yeah, I mean, it really emerged from a particular set of ruptures
mm-hmm.
in which actions that I had taken out of my own magnanimity
mm-hmm.
were then compared to the actions that I'd taken with Vi. In some way where it got twisted
mm-hmm.
in which I was doing something more for others that I wasn't doing for her.
Oh, okay.
And really the genesis of my feeling was like, I'm just being
right.
magnanimous.
Right.
I'm just being generous. And I'm getting cut down because somehow that's hurting you.
Yeah.
And so now I don't trust you seeing me, my intentions. You know, so the part, I know I generated that part,
mm-hmm.
particularly at that moment. Now, has that part showed up in other different situations? Of course.
Of course.
But I don't think I had the consciousness
mm-hmm.
about the part's work to name it in prior relationships or name it in prior ruptures.
Yeah.
It just really came through in this particular one as it stepped forward. I think all of our parts kind of, they form and they live within us. This is what I feel in my own body. They,
mm-hmm.
they form and they live within us, but it really like stepped forward and separated
yeah.
and said, I'm not going to let Aubrey trust you fully until I trust you fully. Mm-hmm. You know, like.
That's what I love about ketamine and IFS, but psychedelics in general. They seem to make what we call the manager parts go to sleep. And then you can have much more access to these other parts that ordinarily you kind of push away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really greased the wheel for you guys.
Yeah. All right. So manager parts. Manager parts sounds like in some ways, like the oversoul of mm-hmm. who you are, that is the captain of all the parts. Mm-hmm. Like the essential Aubrey would be the manager part, but you said parts. So
yeah.
So what is it? So what is it exactly?
Yeah. So it wouldn't be your essence. We can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But my belief is it isn't so much, because you said when this part was created or something like uh-huh. that. It isn't so much they're created at that point, because I believe they come into the world with us. They're all uh-huh. in there. And when they're not hurt or having to protect or something, they're in these lovely roles that are very helpful to us.
Uh-huh.
But then once you do get hurt, and often as a child, so like if you wanted, we could work with that part and see if it's stuck in the past somewhere.
Yeah. Like the genesis, because the accurate language would be it got activated.
It got activated, it got forced into this extreme role.
Right.
Of being, you know, checking everybody out and not trusting
uh-huh.
by something that happened to you. But it wasn't that before it got forced into that role. And we, you know, a lot of IFS is helping that guy trust you more so that he doesn't have to be on guard so much.
Yeah. Let's go there, because I can feel it.
Really?
Okay. I can feel it. I can feel where it really came into form.
Okay. So where do you feel him in your body right now, or around your body?
Like somewhere in between my stomach and my heart, like in the intermediary energy center between those two places.
Okay. And as you notice him there, how do you feel toward him, especially now that you got to know him better recently? How do you feel toward him?
Mm. Well, I feel in a way sad and compassionate
mm-hmm.
that he's had to do what he's mm-hmm. had to do.
That's right. So let him know that. And just see how he reacts to your compassion.
Yeah, buddy. I know you've had to do some work. And I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. How's he reacting?
I think the acknowledgement feels good.
Mm-hmm. Good.
It feels good to be seen
yeah.
and to know that I appreciate the difficult work that he's had to do and
yeah.
the courage for what he's been offering me.
Good. So let's just stay with that for a little while. Just keep extending that appreciation to him until he really trusts that you mean it and trusts you. We'll keep asking him about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, he's, I can hear his voice being like, are you going to be okay? You know, like he's worried about whether, you know, whether or not I'm going to be able to handle reality.
That's right.
I'm going to be able to handle the disappointment.
That's right.
And he's, you know, he's worried about me. He's like, really, like, are you going to be okay, man?
Yeah. So let him know you appreciate that word.
Yeah.
And Aubrey, ask him how old he thinks you are. And don't think of the answer. Just wait and see what comes.
4.
Yeah, so let him know you're a bit older than that now.
Yeah.
And you can handle more than you could when you were 4. And just see how he reacts to that information.
He says, like, are you sure, buddy?
Mm-hmm.
Are you, you sure? You sure it's any different than it was then?
Well, so what do you say to him? And sometimes it helps to just have him turn around and look at you and see
yeah.
who you are now.
You know, I think the truth is that I'm still a sensitive guy.
Yeah.
And I still have the sensitivity of that 4-year-old in me. And
yeah.
I also have a reservoir of power and resilience. And So he's not wrong in identifying that there's a part of me that's no different.
That's right.
And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I have that kind of youthful boy in me. It's part of my joy. It's part of my, and my sensitivity is a gift. And I think the part that I would just like him to see is also the man who's been through, you know, 1,000 psychonautic and emotional battles. And I wear the scars proud, and I've made it through everything.
So how's he reacting now?
He's proud of me, actually.
It's great.
He's like, look at you now.
Yeah.
Look at you go. You know? And I think he's really seeing the fullness of the picture.
Yeah.
I think it looked like he was very myopic on the 4-year-old.
On the 4-year-old, yeah.
But he hadn't seen the fullness of...
He didn't know he wasn't the only protector of that 4-year-old.
Right.
Yeah. So let him know. You can share that load with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I'm with you. We're in this together.
And there's another step we could take if you're up for it.
Sure.
So ask him if we could go to that 4-year-old and get him out of where he might be stuck in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't quite as sensitive as he is now. Would this guy be better able to relax?
I think an acknowledgement of where he came from, and I think I can feel if I really, you know, kind of intuitively tap into what this protector is saying, is like, man, it's always been like this. And he has this feeling like it's always been like this and it's always going to be like this. You're always going to need me.
Yeah.
And really, you know, I can remember where he developed, and it was a similar but different experience where my intentions, and this was regarding my father,
mm-hmm.
my intentions were always grounded in love, excitement,
mm-hmm.
Playfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would sometimes, and I remember, you know, certain instances of this, like, for example, my dad, you know, who did his best to kind of resolve the anger that he had inside himself, mm-hmm. but he had a lot of rage. And sometimes that would be directed at me undeservedly. And one of those instances, for example, he's playing a heated game of ping pong with one of his friends, and he took competition very seriously, even if it was ping pong in his living room. He mishits a ball. I'm kind of watching. He mishits a ball off the top of his paddle, mm-hmm. on a hard smash. So with the mishit, the ball flies through the air and like hits the corner of the room at the top of the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just playing around as a kid, like 4 years old, and I go, home run! You know, and my dad internalized that as some way in which I was mocking him,
yeah.
some way in which I was like, you know, embarrassing him in yeah. front of his friend. And then so he finished the ping pong match, and then he found me and then just kind of unleashed his anger. And I was like, what do you mean? I was just being playful.
Yeah.
Ball hit the ceiling, like looked like a home run to me, you know? But of course, I'm not saying that as a 4-year-old. I'm devastated.
Right.
And so this protector came forward and was like, you know, like, no, I'll take that,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and always also I'll watch, you know, I'll step forward and watch and be out on the lookout. You know, it became like,
if anything out of the blue happens like
yeah.
that, never let that happen again.
Right. And I'll, and just stay in between, stay subtly in between right. you and the people who are dangerous.
That's right. Yeah. So go back to the protector guy.
Yeah.
And just ask him if that's all accurate, if you got that, if that's where he got his job.
Yeah.
And ask him if he gives us permission to go to that 4-year-old and get him out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's time, you know.
It's time.
I buried my father on April 6th.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it was, we acknowledged the darkness and we celebrated his story and the beauty of it. And I feel deeply at peace. You know, we spent, as you mentioned, I spent 10 days with Gaffney and Shiva House and doing medicine journeys and all of the lineage practices. And it was just a beautiful experience. And it really put the whole chapter with my father in a beautiful place. And that's, I think, part of the reason why my part mm-hmm. is saying, like, no, it's time.
It's time.
It's time.
That's right. So go ahead and focus on that 4-year-old and his mm-hmm. feelings and see where you find him in your body, around your body.
Now it's like somewhere between my heart and my voice, you know, in that nexus, like mm-hmm. upper chest mm-hmm. up in my voice. And it's like, you know, kind of squirming around, not trusting what I'm going to say mm-hmm. or do.
Right. How do you feel toward him as you notice him there?
It's sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad that he's feeling like that, that he doesn't trust life.
That's right.
And doesn't trust that people will see his goodness.
That's right. So let him know you have compassion for him. You feel sad for him.
Yeah.
That this happened to him. And see how he reacts to your caring.
He just wants me to hold his hand.
So can you do that?
Yeah.
So let's just do that. Let's just hold his hand and hang with him in this
yeah.
loving way for a while.
He wants, you know, what I see myself doing with him is looking out at the world through my eyes now, yeah. holding his hand and explaining in a way without even needing words, but explaining the world and saying, like, it's not your fault.
That's right.
You know, it's not your fault. Like, this is just part of this world, and people have their own shit and their own stuff, and yeah. and like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to continue being who you are, and in a way, now I'm saying, like, I'll protect you.
That's right.
You know, like grown man Aubrey.
That's right.
My 42 years, like, I got this, buddy.
Right.
Like, I got this.
How's it? Does he believe you, or how's he reacting?
Yeah, he does. You know, now he's kind of like hugging on my leg and my hip, and fantastic. I got my arm around him.
It's really great.
And he trusts me. He trusts the man that I've become.
That's fantastic. And ask him now if he does feel like you get everything that happened that was so bad for him, or if there's more he needs you to feel or see or sense about it.
He says he's good, but he says that he's not the only one.
So there are other parts back there?
There's other parts of me that are stuck at different ages. And he feels good. We feel like, you know, we're really together. And
right.
he's pointing to, and I don't know where, but he's pointing to somewhere. And I bet if I tapped in, for a minute, I could see another one.
It's up to you.
Yeah, there feels like there's, you know, feels like at least one more that...
Then just follow where he's pointing.
pointing to 31.
Age 31?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And 31 was when I started my company on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a part of me that came out that was constantly afraid that the world was going to, you know, tear down my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so hyper-vigilant, or that part through me was so hyper-vigilant to protect me from the world, that I thought wouldn't see the goodness of what I had to offer. Mm-hmm. and what I was trying to do. And in a way, that part has been kind of invisible and not named as a part, but that's when it started, when things really, I started to get momentum and I started to be successful. And then this part stepped forward and said, you know, like, I'll keep you safe, but I'll never sleep. I'll be looking, mm-hmm. I'll be looking out at the horizon at all times, you know, like I'm on watch. And the company was successful and, you know, sold it in 2021. It was a amazing, challenging at times ride. And there was things that happened that were outrageous and difficult. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't like this part was wrong,
mm-hmm.
but also it's time for that part to come home, because everything's worked out.
That's right.
It's worked out so well.
And he's still doing it.
Yeah. He's still out there in his encampment, you know, with his binoculars,
right,
looking at everything. And it's just, there's a sense of ease that can kind of come over. Like, there's no, you know, it's okay.
So how do you feel toward him as you see him that way?
I feel a lot of, he's older, and I feel a lot of admiration for him,
mm-hmm.
and real, like, respect, mm-hmm. as, 'cause it was really a warrior part, you know, like in this way. And I guess a lot of the protectors have that kind of warrior archetype, but
right. But
this one, the way I see him is like a soldier.
So let's honor him for that.
Yeah. Just
let him know you get how much he made it happen,
mm-hmm.
and how much he had to look out.
Yeah.
And see how he's reacting.
Yeah, he feels like a brother, you know, like when we're talking now in my imagination, he's saying, like, we've been through some shit together.
Yeah.
We've been through some shit together. Like, we've been through some wars. We've been through some battles.
And, yeah.
And he says, it's been an honor to serve you.
Wow, that's beautiful. Beautiful. But ask if he does realize or trust. He doesn't have to in the same way now.
Yeah, in a way, he says, you know, more wars are coming. And, but I can recognize when there's a time for peace.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it's been a long shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's ready, right? He's tired.
He's really tired.
He's fucking tired.
Yeah.
And he's ready
if you need him.
He's ready if I need him. And he's also ready to, you know, go off duty.
Good.
You know, if I, if,
So yeah. Let's see if we can help him do that now.
Yeah.
Maybe even lay down and sleep or whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, it's funny, like he... Yeah, he just wants to go home and cuddle with his woman.
Right.
And just, you know, take off all of his service uniform.
Absolutely.
Lay down his guns. And
fantastic.
And he just wants to, enter into the eros and the rapture of life in a way, you know, I mean, he just wants to experience the other side,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's funny, there is, I heard a story and who knows if it's true or not, but I believe it was the legend is that the Sumerians, I believe is the ancient civilization, they had love temples.
Mm.
And temples, like many of the mystery school temples back in ancient times. And they had a policy that when their warriors went off to war, before they would be able to come back and inhabit the village, the town, the city, the kingdom, whatever, they would need to stop at love temples to get the war fucked out of them.
Mm, wow.
You know, to like re-engage with the erotic nature and the erotic beauty of life.
Yeah.
To rebalance the violence of war.
Yeah.
Of combat. And whether that's true or not, I think there's a beautiful parable that can be told in that. And it's interesting that this kind of warrior part, you know, that's what he wants. He wants to make love.
He remembers that parable.
Yeah, he does. He remembers that parable, and his desire is to really step into the field of eros in both the sexual and non-sexual ways, but really feel the goodness of life.
So he's good now, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. He might be more than good, actually. he might be real good.
Oh, good. Yeah. So let's go back to the 4-year-old then.
Yeah.
So just focus on him again,
mm-hmm.
and ask how he's reacting to seeing the 31-year-old at peace now.
Yeah, he's happy. He's like, you know, thanks for taking care of my brother.
Good, yeah.
It's like, it feels like they all, of course they do, but, you know, just understanding how they all have their own
relationships, yeah.
You know,
internal family systems.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and really the sentiment is like, thanks for taking care of my big bro.
Beautiful. So one last thing. I'd like you to go into that scene with the boy and your father.
Yeah.
And be with him there in the way he needed somebody, wherever in particular he's stuck.
It was, he wants me to, and what I'm saying to him is, hey man, hey buddy, you didn't do anything wrong. Like, that was a home run.
Mm-hmm.
You called it.
Yeah.
You called the shot. It was correct. And everything else that came after that was some kind of, you know, some kind of neuroses, pathology, some kind of projection, some kind of whatever you want to call it, coming from my father. And right. And as me, like, I'm like whispering, like, you see what this really was?
Right.
You know, this wasn't anything that he said it was.
Yeah.
You called it right.
That's right.
Like, you were right. You were playing and you called what you saw and that triggered this response. And, you know, I don't even know if I have the words exactly myself to explain to you what that response was. So I haven't thought about it in that way, but I know that I'm telling that 4-year-old, like, I got this. Like, yeah. I know exactly what this is. We can pin this down. We can find the source. We took the time. We could see where this came from and why he needed that competition, why he felt the impulse to be, like, it was possible for him to be humiliated. And he could, you know, if he could sit down here with Dick and do a podcast, you know, back in the day, maybe he'd understand where this stuff was coming from, you know? And so it's just kind of like letting him know, like, you called it right and you didn't do anything wrong.
How's he reacting?
Yeah, he trusts me even more now.
Good.
You know, he like really trusts like, wow, like you really got this. You know, you really get it.
So ask him if there's anything he'd like you to do for him back there before we take him to a good, safe place out of there. Or if he just wants to leave with you.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's interesting, like, really he wants me to almost replay the scene in a way where, mm-hmm. like, I'm actually there, mm-hmm. and I step in, and I go to him, and I say, hey, buddy, you didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Let me go handle this with Dad.
So do it. You know? Go ahead and do it in there.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with just like, Dad, like, relax.
Yeah.
Just a boy.
Yeah.
Just playing.
That's right.
Just called it like it was.
That's right.
So, you know, settle, like, and I'm very calm, mm-hmm. you know, telling my dad, like, settle. Like, all right, where's this feeling coming from, Dad?
Good.
You know, like, what's causing this big reaction? You know, because this is just a boy playing and calling it.
That's right.
So this is, something is misaligned here, Dad. And
what's it like for the boy to watch you stand up for him with the dad?
He just has supreme confidence in me, actually, because he realizes that I'm wiser, stronger, actually, than my father was.
That's right.
You know, and so it's like he's got, you know, he's watching curiously, like as the scene unfolds, mm-hmm. and learning. Mm-hmm. But it's this immense, immense confidence.
It's great.
Yeah. And safety, you know, confidence and safety, like, oh shit, like, I got Aubrey on my team. Yeah. Like, I got the full Aubrey.
That's right.
I got him and his full selfness.
That's right.
And he's coming with all of the knowledge that he has and all of the, you know, resilience that he's forged and all of the strength. And I got Aubrey's at his best. You know, I call that like the best of myself. Mm-hmm. I've named it Dragonheart.
Right.
You know, like, I got Dragonheart over
That's
here.
Right.
You know, and he's just proud. You know, he's proud and he's safe. And
he's safe, yeah.
Yeah.
So ask if now he's ready to leave that time and place with you and come live with you somewhere.
Yeah.
Just see where he'd like to go. He could come right here or a fantasy place, whatever he wants.
He wants to go into my leg.
Perfect.
Like into my right thigh.
Yeah. So let's bring him right there.
Yeah.
Tell me when he's there.
Yeah.
How's he like it?
He loves it. He gets to be a part of every time I dance as a part of my leg.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good. And let him know he never has to go back there and you're going to take care of him this way now.
Yeah.
And see how that is for him now.
Yeah, I got you, buddy. And he's saying, you know, perfect. Let's have some fun.
Great. And before you do that, ask if he'd like to unload the feelings and beliefs he got back there now that he's safe with you.
He says he doesn't necessarily know how to do that.
He doesn't need to know how.
He wants to, but he says, you know, I don't know how. He thinks that the patterns are stuck, like the grooves have been made.
Not a bit.
Uh-huh.
So, and he doesn't need to know how. All we need is his desire to unload it.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. He's all in.
Okay.
You know.
So ask where he carries all that, in his body or on his body?
In his stomach.
And ask what he'd like to give it all up to. Light, water, fire, wind, earth, anything else.
Water.
So take him to water or set that up however it should happen.
Mm-hmm.
And tell him to just let all that out of his stomach and let the water take it away till it's all gone.
Yeah, he's purging in
a
pool that's fed by a waterfall and it goes downstream.
Great. Yeah, so tell him to just keep going until it's all out of him. No need to carry any of that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's an intense purge. It's going all the way. Reminds me of one of those ayahuasca purges where you just keep going until you just taste the different types of bile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's time to just keep going.
Yeah.
No rush.
Yeah. Yeah, he did it.
How's he feel without all that?
Restored, whole.
That's great.
You know, I can actually, it's funny, I can actually see myself. Somehow my vision of him was kind of obscured. It was actually hard to see him as me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I can see my young face, my actual young, smiling self.
That's right. That's really great.
Yeah, it's interesting how until he did that, I couldn't see the truth of who he was.
That's right. And tell him if he wants to now, he can invite qualities into his body.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see what comes into him now.
Yeah, it's there's his crown chakra is opening up,
mm-hmm.
and there's a pouring in of light and information and energy,
mm-hmm.
and I think the thing that it's showing him and the qualities that it's calling forth and evoking and training is a quality of faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quality of faith in the divine.
Beautiful.
That the divine is always there.
That's
and is
right.
always kind of guiding and he can rest in a deeper faith.
That's
that
right.
There's a higher power.
Beautiful. Good. So before we stop, let's bring in that guy who didn't trust your wife.
Yeah.
To see this 4-year-old now and just see how he reacts.
He's saying, well, if this little whippersnapper can do it, I can certainly do it too.
That's right. That's true.
You know, like he's like, you know, I think he's saying like, I'll follow your lead as well. Like I'll open up to trust in the divine. Open up to the higher power. And just a deeper trust, a trust that extends even beyond this lifetime, a trust of the eternal continuity of consciousness.
Fantastic. Yeah. Ask him if there's anything he needs to unload to be able to do that, that he carries in his body or on his body.
He has anger, and he has a desire to, I almost see like a snake coming out of his mouth, mm-hmm. like a desire to attack with venom.
Yeah. So let's, what does he want to do with the snake as it comes out?
The snake, he doesn't have full, it's like he has a tenuous control over the snake, and the snake wants to attack the people who he's felt hurt by.
Okay.
But like, he doesn't want that to happen.
Right.
You know, but the snake's like out and it's looking and it's ready to strike and it's bending towards it, and he's kind of bending it. So it feels like we need a place for the snake to unload its venom safely.
Perfect.
That doesn't hurt anybody else.
Perfect. So let's find that place.
It's interesting, what I see is I don't know if this is right, but like, what I see is I see another beast, almost like a king snake anaconda, that wants to eat this snake, but I'm not letting it happen because I'm not sure if that's what I want. I'm not sure if I want this snake to be eaten. I think maybe like moving that beast, that other snake that wants to eat it, aside, which is, I think, this desire to just kill and crush my anger, but I feel like it's not the right move.
Okay. So let's see what the beast is. Just ask what it is.
The beast is the one that wants to protect everyone around me from the venom
of
the snake.
Okay.
Yeah. It wants to make sure that the snake doesn't hurt anybody unnecessarily.
Yeah. So let it know we can help the snake change. It doesn't have to be eaten.
Yeah.
And see if it's okay with that.
It's feels like it's a crocodile right now. It's kind of been an amorphous beast, but it's a little bit stubborn, and it says, a snake's a snake. And I eat snakes, and that's what I do.
Okay, but would it make an exception? Just watch. You can just check it out.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to take a brief moment to let everybody know that we're back again with the Arcadia Festival of a More Beautiful World, November 2 through 5, Area 15 in Nevada. And our lineup this year is insane. We have actually, literally, my dream lineup of artists and speakers, including like Chromeo, The Glitch Mob, Floozies, Dr. Fresh, Troy Boy, Elderbrook, Jai Wolf, Desert Dwellers, Porangi, Vailana, Makad Brooks, The Human Experience. I mean, the music is out of control. On the main stage, I'll be speaking. Mama Gina will be speaking. Del Bigtree will be speaking. NQ, the greatest living poet, in my opinion, will be speaking. And we got Matthias DiStefano. We have Blue. We have so many unbelievable speakers and unbelievable experiences at the Area 15 property out there in Nevada, which is also mind-blowing and awe-inspiring, and just a beautiful community of people that are there to make a stand for life, to make a stand for celebrating our sovereignty, our freedom, our love, our joy, our ecstasis, our play, and wrap it in a container where we get to actually stand together facing a shared horizon and say, we are here, we are here, we are here. We're going to blow this away. Anybody who comes, I promise you, it's going to be an unforgettable experience. And I just can't wait to see you guys there. So if you're interested, tickets are going extremely fast. Go to fitforservice.com/Arcadia with a K and check it out. There's a few different ticket options, whether you just want to attend for the festivities at night, or if you want to be part of the full immersive speaker program, or if you want to help with a lifetime membership and be a builder of what Arcadia not only is now, but will be for many years into the future. So once again, fitforservice.com/Arcadia with a K. I can't wait to see you guys there.
Yeah, I mean, I just witnessed a little bit of a battle. So here's what happened in my mind. I told the giant alligator, I was like, look, you know, we got another plan for the snake. And the alligator started to move away, crocodile, whatever, and started to move away. And the snake bit at it as it was kind of moving away. The snake sees this, mm-hmm. you know, crocodile's a threat, right. Bit at it. And then the crocodile wheels around and like grabs it in its jaws and is just letting it know, like, I can eat you,
right?
But on request of
it's going to honor
of Avi. He's going to honor the request,
yeah.
And he's going to let him go.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, and then the snake is kind of like humbled, pacified, a little bit, you know, a little bit wounded, actually, and is no longer looking to strike anybody. It's kind of been, humbled and pacified in a way, but now I feel like. Now I feel like I need to help the snake.
Yeah, let's do that.
I see myself like we were in a forest setting, so I'm like making a poultice of herbs. Mm-hmm. And where the crocodile had bit it, I'm wrapping the poultice of herbs mm-hmm. around the wounds of the snake and kind of with, I don't know, gauze or something, like packing in the healing herbs, and it's working, it's healing the snake. And the snake is now like actually not coming out of my mouth. It's now part of the forest.
Great.
It's almost like it, it's now like cruising around, no longer connected to inside my mouth.
Does it still carry the venom? Does it want to unload venom?
No, it has the venom, but it's not active. It's okay. Not desiring to strike. It just wants to kind of cruise and be a snake.
Okay, great. Great. So we're going to backtrack. So the snake can be a snake. Let's go back to the guy whose mouth it came out of.
Yeah.
How's he doing without it?
Good. I mean, he's not purging, but he's like spitting a bit, like just getting the taste.
Yeah.
Like the taste of the snake and the venom out of his mouth.
Good.
And I actually have my medicine sister, Wida, who's, I love her so much. She's incredible. She, she's from Ecuador, and she has this spray that's kind of a solution of alcohol and this particular herb called chihuahua, and it makes your mouth really tingle. And I love it. And it's so I can see myself spraying it in my mouth to get the taste out. And he's happy that's out. It's interesting. It was almost like another protector nested within protector.
That is what it is. Yeah. you find that once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then before we stop, check with the crocodile and see if he's okay with all this.
Yeah, crocodile's okay. He's close by. And I think, you know, I watched the destructiveness of my father's anger.
Yeah.
And there was only a few times where I saw that come out of myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do not want that to happen.
And we get that, you know, the crocodile kept it contained.
Yeah.
So we can appreciate him for that.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's happy to just like cruise around, but he's in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, truth be told, I want him in the ecosystem.
Yeah. It's great. So does that feel complete or is there anything
else? It does. Yeah, it feels complete. And actually, I'm grateful to know the snake and I'm grateful to know the crocodile because now they're externalized and separate there. Right. And I can see when the snake moves up through my mouth and then I can see the crocodile and I can see this whole scene.
The battle.
And I can see like, all right, this is what's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. And And because there's really no, you know, there was no place that this, like the snake naturally, if we're just looking at biology and zoology, a snake doesn't unload its venom except in some person or place, the person or animal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, I was trying to think of like, could it unload it in a tree? And the snake was like, what are you talking about? It's not what we do. We don't bite trees. You know, like, don't be crazy.
That's great.
We bite fucking, you know.
Flesh. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's kind of it's cool. The snake's being the snake, the crocodile's being the crocodile. You know, and my protector is like cool to be. See, the thing is, my protector's as big as me, and it's the same age. This is a week ago,
right?
So like, it just kind of like overlays completely into me,
right?
You know, it just kind of like. Like full, not doesn't live any, doesn't feel like it lives anywhere. It's just like, actually feels like it integrated full body size on full body size.
Yeah. And that's what happened. You integrated a bunch of these guys.
Yeah.
Who were sort of out on their own.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Really cool. I know we did some of this last time and I was like, I don't know if I got, but it's so powerful.
Yeah, well,
to get in here, you know? I mean, like thinking about therapy in general, and I've been to a variety of different therapy, like very few things. I mean, I'm just being kind to the field, like truly nothing has gotten to this level of depth and this level of service to my psyche.
Thank you.
This quickly. Yeah. I mean, it's astounding, really.
Yeah. And you're really good at it. This is one of the more powerful sessions I've been a part of. So
yeah. It's funny, you know, how my imagination, how I visualize things so well.
Well, let me speak to that for a second, because for me, you weren't imagining any of it. It's not like you're making it up. You were entering this other world where they all live.
Yeah. No, that's what it felt like.
It was very real. And psychedelics takes you the same place a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do in there has big, big impact on this world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so when you're working with other people in this, is there sometimes that like their ability to enter this call it, Ram Dass called them lokas, like planes of mm-hmm. consciousness, yeah. dimensional realities, whatever it is in our psychic kind of field. Is that where sometimes the difficulty is people have trouble kind of entering into the field?
So, yeah, they have trouble because they have manager parts that don't trust it's safe to do that.
Uh-huh.
So we have to work with those parts and get permission. But once those, you know, what's called the ego, pejoratively in most spiritual things, once the managers give permission, the door opens and people just enter the way you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like I said, it's all quite real.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you say imagination, but in a way that was a euphemism because I knew what it was.
Yeah.
I knew that it was real.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can be shy about claiming things like this.
Believe me, it's been a challenge for all these 40 years to come out and say, no, it's not, you know, a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to, so one of the things that I haven't really, like, I understand the protector and I'm starting to understand the manager parts. There's other aspects. There's, you know, the exile aspect.
Which was a four-year-old.
Okay. So that's the four-year-old. So the mm-hmm. exile is those younger versions
younger,
of yourself.
Younger, more sensitive, more vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That is stuck in. You know, my father was very much like yours, so I was doing some work along with you.
Yeah.
So they're stuck in those kinds of scenes because he would, out of the blue, just be furious at me at that age.
And yeah.
To this day, if my wife ever starts to get angry like that out of the blue, it just, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're in a... the deepest desire... You know, and ultimately with the reconciliation, and the deepest desire is that the default assumption is that I'm coming from a good place,
mm-hmm.
and that my intentions were actually good, beautiful, true.
Yep.
Like I was in the field of value.
Yeah.
Like, and let the exception be if I was being a dick.
That's right.
You know, like, but let's lay down the assumption that actually I'm being good.
Yeah.
You know, and in that assumption, you know, it can really soften all of this. And, you know, if my father had that, like, you know, Aubrey, he's a good kid.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to assume that what's coming from him is coming from goodness.
That's right.
Rather than some kind of vindictive mm-hmm. urge or some desire to harm or some, you know, disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ultimately like, what I want to establish as a field between everybody in my intimate circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look, let's all just assume.
Presumption of goodness.
Presumption yeah. of goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to point out, because we haven't really talked about this yet, but it's really the centerpiece of IFS, is what I call the self with a capital S.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got your parts to relax back and open space, you knew what to do with them. I kind of guided a few things, but you basically did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find, that in this essence of people can't be damaged, isn't everybody, just beneath the surface of the parts, when it's released, knows how to heal, just knows how to do it right.
Yeah.
So.
It feels like there's... you could say almost a density of selfness, if you want to use some, like trying to measure it, which mm-hmm. is kind of, it's beyond actual measurement, but there's a way in which especially in certain medicine journeys, I can feel almost a greater sense of mm-hmm. selfness.
That's right.
Kind of coming in. And it's interesting because I think we often think of our self is just our self.
No.
But actually there's the hollow version of ourself.
That's
where
right.
there's still aspects and still structure, But there's a way that selfness can pour through into your body totally. And fill you up.
That's right.
And when that happens, that's when you're absolutely at your best, your that's most right. magnetic, your most, you know, humorous, your most joyful. Like there's a whole other expression when you're really full of your selfness.
And that's what I'll be talking about this afternoon, because psychedelics has, it's somehow, they put these manager parts to sleep, and that releases what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find yourself with a huge amount of those qualities. And then that's a big invitation for all these exiled parts to come in and get help.
Yeah, it's like the selfness is the real father.
Yeah.
In a way. And the manager parts pretend to be the father. Like pretend to be dad and that's internally right. dad and be like, I know what to do, everybody.
Yeah.
And then like the real father comes in and says,
and they all, I've got this.
Like, I've got this. Yes. You know, like I know you might be playing daddy over here, but like I'm father, like capital F father. And like, I fucking got this.
You know, in family therapy, we would call those parentified children.
Mm-hmm.
They were
parentified children.
The kids in the family who think they've got to run things. Because the parents had abdicated or something, you know, had happened. But they're young. These manager parts who act so grown up are really young and scared.
Right.
And so once the grown up comes in, they feel a lot of relief. Oh my God, there is somebody in there.
Yeah.
And we had to have that initial protector really get to know you and see, no, I don't have to protect this 4-year-old alone because Aubrey's here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. You know, it's so often I think we have one of these manager parts who's really quite young and they're driving the car.
That's right.
And then yourself, who's is they're pretending that yourself is a child.
Right.
And the self is in the back seat.
Exactly.
And, you know, the manager dad is like, stay quiet back there. Here's some fucking sugar. I got this. And then every once in a while, the self wakes up.
That's
and
exactly
like,
right.
Like, what are you doing driving?
Why are you driving? You're 6 years old.
Yeah. Do you know who I am? Right. Like, I've been driving these ships, you know, for millennia.
That's right.
You know, in lifetime after lifetime. You know, I got this. Like, right. Step aside.
Yeah, so one of the goals of IFS we achieved with a bunch of your parts, which is to help them transform out of their extreme roles so they can be who they're more designed to be. But the second goal is what we're talking about now, having the parts come to trust self as the leader, because they didn't trust you back, you know, like you right. couldn't protect when you were 4 years old.
Right.
So then they say, then this protector comes in and says, I got this, I'm going to make sure you never get hurt again, and doesn't know that you grow up. And so that's what we were updating.
Yeah, it's, I've felt, what's been interesting in the psychedelic space is I've felt my body kind of really open for more selfness.
That's exactly to come what in. Happens.
It's like, it's like kind of like upgrades of the, and it's interesting because it's not like a new self comes in. It's not like a possession
right.
or like some entities entering me. No, it's just more me.
Yeah.
But more, and as more me comes in, it clarifies.
Yeah.
It clarifies my natural tendencies and who I really am. My what Mark Gaffney would call my unique self.
Yeah.
It really like, it just expands and intensifies the gravity.
Yeah.
Of that. And that, you know, when I feel that happening, it's like everything that I'm looking out in the world is like, oh, I got this.
That's right.
Like, I got this. There's an amazing confidence that comes when the self is really present and full.
Well, and I have what I call the 8 C's of self. And you mentioned 2 of them just now, confidence and clarity are characteristics of self. As well as calm, curiosity, compassion, creativity, courage, and connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what, as I found self showing up in people, I just started to, how does it show up? What are the qualities?
Mm-hmm. Creativity is an interesting one, because I did notice this correlation between when I'm in the fullness of myself, mm-hmm. I am hella creative.
That's right.
Like dangerously creative.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming up with ideas like, that is a fucking good idea.
That's a good idea.
You know, like there's some interesting, and it's really beautiful to actually recognize that that's part of it. And I think if I was going to understand why that is, I think the self, while it is yourself and unique, it's also connected to the field.
Totally.
And can source creativity.
Exactly.
From a larger bed, a larger pool.
Yeah, for me, what we call self, you know, quantum physics has photons as both particle and wave.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the wave state of self, which is the numinous, you know, the non-dual. And often in psychedelics, you enter that place where you're not connected to your body, you're just in the field.
Yeah.
And then you particleize, you come into your body. It's the same God or whatever you want to call it, who is in your body that you just experience a lot of.
Yeah.
But there is that connection. And yours was a good illustration of how, as these parts unburden, they feel more spiritual energy. Because at the end, there were two of your parts that said, there's this spiritual connection now. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 4-year-old wanted the light to come through, and then it instructed and then my older part was like, I can learn from you.
Yeah.
You know, I can learn from you. And that they were pointing to that as the desired resolution. Like they didn't say, it's interesting. You asked like, what characteristic would you like to add? And the quality was this pouring in.
That's right.
And really, I can see that now as we've been talking, like it was a pouring in of selfness.
That's right.
And the self as connected to the divine as well.
That's exactly right.
You know, so it was like, just like pouring in. What do I want? I want more self.
That's right.
You know, like, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Maximum.
Yeah. It's a great description of that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, what a gift. And there's so, as we keep talking, there's like little, subtle things, you know, like the parentification of the child, like all of these little gems. I'm just curious. I just want to open the space. If there's anything that's in your mind that you think might be cool to explore, you know, and cool to offer for the listeners or for me.
Well, I suspect that some of your listeners were working along with you,
mm-hmm.
and once you do connect with all these parts, it's great in the session, but it may not stick unless you follow up. So to you and your listeners, I encourage you every day for at least a month to check in with all these. I think we met 5 parts today.
Yeah.
And some people like making a map, you know, drawing them or somehow keeping track of them, journaling, listening to this podcast again, so that they don't feel neglected or that they don't feel like you forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll come a time where they trust that you're not going to, and then it'll all stick.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my homework.
What is, so I'm imagining, you know, so we got the 4-year-old, we got the snake, we got the crocodile, we got my 31-year-old soldier.
Right.
And we got my 42-year-old, 1-week-old protector that popped out last week before this podcast. And I have a very special place that one of my teachers, Maestro Hamilton Sutherland, he encouraged me to make what he called like a medicine world, which is a place in my own personal astral consciousness. And it was actually the place that the 4-year-old went to purge. Because when I go there, I wake up in a cave and I'm on a, like almost like an altar bed in the cave. And there's a little bit of water trickling down, but there's an opening of the cave. And then I go down and then there's a rose garden and a winding path through the rose garden. And I go to the right and there's a big waterfall that comes down, and then there's a stream, and then there's woods that go there, and I can keep playing and go deep, follow that, and I follow it off to like a desert, you know, eventually, or I cross the stream and then there's a cave where I can meet allies and different. And so there's a whole world that I built, and it's my very special like world. And I'm wondering if letting them free in that world to have their own kind of little existence is an appropriate kind of move. It feels kind of like a good idea. Like they're all there in my contained little world and they get to have their experience. The soldier gets to make love. The boy gets to go play around in the waterfall. And you know, everybody kind of in the snake gets to be a snake in the forest, and the crocodile gets to move through and eat fish in the stream. And it feels like kind of like a cool place to just check in with everybody there, rather than, you know, I know we had them in my leg and that felt cool too. And it feels good to have them in my body, but it also feels good to me to have them in this little playground.
And they can be in more than one place, but you want to make sure they want that. So,
yeah.
So, I don't know if we have time now, but check with them and see if that would be good for them or if they'd like to stay where they are.
Yeah, it's everybody but the 1 week old, you know, the full me wants to just be in me.
Mm-hmm,
wants to just actually be with me as I walk, as I talk, as it wants actual like full integration of and into my selfness.
Yeah.
It wants to actually dissolve into my selfness.
Yeah.
Completely. And then the other guys kind of want to, at least for now, they want to kind of live their little life and live it in a different way, play a different role.
Totally.
And have fun.
It's great.
Yeah. How cool. And it's cool for me to actually weave, you know, some old teachings in this old place. I remember, you know, I have a story, and I'm telling the story in the book that I'm writing, Psychonaut. I had this wild ayahuasca experience, and in this wild ayahuasca experience, it's a very long story and I won't tell the full story, but basically I ended up in the belief that a demon had taken my heart, which was false. Actually, it was only my fear that was possible. And ultimately divine guidance came through and assured me like, nobody can take your heart, son. Like, it's you, and nobody can actually touch it because it's God. And you know, God's not going to take God, you know, like it is just is it, right. It can't, it's right. Not possible. Right. So it's my Atman. It's the center of my centers. It's
what I call yourself.
Yeah.
With a capital S.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it couldn't happen, but I got tricked by these, you know, forces, external or internal, but I got tricked by these forces, and the demon who I called the world crusher, he tricked me and said, here, I'll give you your heart back. And he gave me a red stone, and the red stone, I was so eager to get my heart back. I grabbed it and I tried to put it in, but it was not my heart. It was a false heart. It was like, and again, in the Rosicrucian kind of model, this was like the Luciferian, it was like a Luciferian action. Lucifer being the light bringer, but the bringer of light as if you needed light. It was the false light. It was like, here's this false light, denying my internal, my internal light.
Right.
So I was stuck with this false light that was actually, it was actually incredibly destructive. It was almost like the, you know, the ring of Sauron, you know, and I was like, fuck, what do I do with this?
Right.
And I remember my first impulse was like, well, I don't want this. Let me put it in my world. And then I put it in my world, and my world started to decay and get destroyed. It almost turned like the Stranger Things upside down, where I was like, shit, I can't put it there. This place is too special. So I ended up dissolving it back into the entirety of the cosmos and just releasing it. But this place is like, it's been with me in so many of my journeys, and it's been a really powerful tool for me to actually guide journeys. You know, I'll often step into there. And as I said, there's a cave where, because I'm very curious, and part of my psychonautic journey has been guided by, of course, the healing, but also curiosity. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go into the other cave in there where I'll meet allies or entities or guides mm-hmm. that'll speak to me in the medicine. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I just kind of want to offer that from my own experience. It's mm-hmm. been really helpful to have and really build out this world and go see and go like touch the roses and feel the walls of my cave and mm-hmm. then go in the water and make this more and more real
yeah.
and use this as a tool in my journeys as well. And it's interesting to see now that this is a place where my parts are playing.
They can populate.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. Now, when you go into your own medicine journeys, mm-hmm. how often do you encounter your own parts? Like what's, with your breadth of knowledge and your kind of, you and your wife are mm-hmm. deep in this. So when you go in, how often do you interact with your own parts in the psychedelic space?
It depends. So mostly I've done ketamine and uh-huh. on medium dose ketamine, I totally leave my body and I'm in the non-dual, mm-hmm. in a kind of blissful place. But then when I come back, I feel what you're talking about. The self comes back into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then my parts start to come forward. Mm-hmm. And I, unlike you, I don't see a lot. It's like I do it all with the lights off. But I can sense them. I hear their voices. And
uh-huh.
And so, yeah, then I have been able to do a lot of personal work that way.
Yeah. Where are there places where, is there any places that are like stubborn?
In me?
In you. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did a podcast with a woman named Saltram Alioni. Do you know?
No, not familiar.
Feeding Your Demons is a book she wrote.
Mm.
It's a lama. And she asked if I something I wanted to work with. And so I have a little guy who, if my wife, like I said, comes at me out of the blue, comes at me is not really what it's like. I mean,
right.
what she's doing, but
right.
feels that way.
Yep.
So this little guy jumps out and really starts to defend. And so I asked her to help me with that. And we traded sessions. And so, yeah, that's something, because I've done a lot of work. But
of course,
that guy still does that automatic thing.
Uh-huh.
And only with my wife, never anybody else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it was helpful.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And in where in the sessions have you found also, like, have you come up against, because this was very fluid and very effective, you know, like everything kind of moved real smooth
yeah.
in this. Where do you find that there's like sticky points in your clients without obviously telling people's personal stories and naming them, but just this kind of like a general meta category of like, or even personal experiences without naming names of like, this was a tough one.
Yeah.
Like this was a puzzle
yeah.
that really required my best
yeah.
to solve this puzzle.
So there are clients who've had horrible histories. And so they have lots of what I call exiles. And they have lots of protectors who swore they would never go back to those places again, and they never wanted to feel any of that again. And so the prospect, like I asked the original guy, do we have permission to go to that four-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
Many clients would say, hell no, I never want to go there.
Uh-huh.
And so then I have to go through a series of discussions with that protector, going over all the fears he would have about letting you go to that boy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a common set of fears. A lot of times a fear of being overwhelmed again,
mm-hmm.
or you can't do anything about it. What's the point? I don't want to feel any of that again. Or that he'd be judged by me or somebody mm-hmm. if he opened that door. And so we've gotten good at addressing each of those fears, but we also learned the hard way not to try and bypass those protectors
mm-hmm.
because they'll punish the client after what we call backlash. So we don't go, like if your protector had insisted we not go, we wouldn't go to the four-year-old.
Yeah.
And that's some of my concern about psychedelics, because, like I said, these protectors go offline.
Right.
Then you access all this stuff. Then they come back and say, what the hell happened here?
Right.
And then there's backlash. So to counter that, in the prep sessions, we're soliciting the protectors, like, do you have any fear about taking this journey?
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting some of those fears, and then we're addressing all those fears, and we don't have them take the medicine until they, the protectors give permission. So that's the biggest place where you get stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. So if somebody's now, you know, obviously this going through the personal, actually, it helps people understand the transpersonal, and hopefully people, as the first time we did the podcast, it was an amazing response. So, you know, hopefully people were able to do some work along with me and understand the process along with me. But if someone feels like, man, I really need some support, you know, so I know that you have a network of IFS kind of facilitators. And what do you call yourself? First of all, therapists?
Yeah, although therapists. There are IFS practitioners too.
Yeah.
But yeah, on our website, there's a directory. It's pretty extensive. So
you could go through the directory, find someone in your area. Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are certified, that we certify, that they've gone through a certain number of steps.
Mm-hmm.
So we can at least sort of say that they've done those things.
Yeah. All right. So what's the URL to the website?
It's ifs-institute.com.
Okay. And also, presumably, if somebody wanted to go through the certifications, is there any pre-qualification? Do you have to have a certain level of education? Do you have to be a therapist, a psychiatrist, psychologist? Like, what is the pre-certification to actually get certified in this?
Yeah, there was a period where we didn't have a lot of that, and there were a lot of coaches and as well as therapists and sometimes teachers and so on. But we've shifted now toward the main trainings are mainly for therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And we're offering another training program for the other people. That the tricky thing is having people who aren't therapists go to these exiles with clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other training is going to not have that piece of it.
Mm-hmm. So there's different tracks.
Different tracks, yeah.
Yeah. And a therapist is designated as someone who, like, what's the level of schooling that's required?
Usually
to
a
be
master's.
A therapist.
At least a master's degree.
Mm-hmm. A master's in psychology or?
Counseling, psychology, marital and family therapy,
right.
Social work, so on and so on.
So let's say you've reached the level of psychiatrist, which is an MD,
right.
You know, ability to prescribe. What's your overall, you know, what's your overall feeling about the field of these psychiatric drugs that are often prescribed? You know, what's your kind of sense? So like, if you're talking psychiatrist to psychiatrist, like, all right, like, what's your guidance for the field about, like, you know, if you're working, even kids are getting on so many psychiatric medications that have so much complexity to what they're doing and kind of the other effects that these psychiatric medications are having.
You know, I'm not anti-medication per se. I'm anti-medication as the answer. And that's been the problem with psychiatry, that there are conditions where, if, for example, you're in a manic episode or you're hallucinating or something like that, you need to chill. You know, your system needs to calm down, and medication can do that. And the problem, though, is it'll tend to suppress all the parts that were giving you those symptoms.
Right.
And you can live your life, but it's a much more hollow life.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, okay, let's chill the system until we now can do some IFS kind of parts work. and heal the parts that were causing the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the medication, they keep doing it during that period, and sometimes that can take a while, but it's not the long-term answer.
Right. And have you seen that play out where there's been people who've been, you know, on a history of psychiatric medication, and then they go into the IFS, you know, therapy,
it's harder.
And they're like, all right, maybe I don't need this anymore. Are you saying it's harder?
It's harder if they have a long history of being on those drugs, because it's harder for them to access self.
Mm-hmm.
That's just been my experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like there's the deadening of all of the activity also limits the capacity for the selfness to pour through.
Yeah, I mean, my experience isn't that extensive, but with that population, but that's been my experience.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a gift.
Same for me.
Yeah, such a gift. And I'm so glad that we got to do this in person and really...
Same, yeah, I feel very connected.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. So... You know, count me as an ally. And again, so we gave the website and also the book that's recent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the book is being, you know, wildly popularly received.
It's doing pretty well.
I'm sure it is. Thanks so much, Dick.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. And thanks everybody for, you know, going on this ride and just being with me. And also, you know, I just want to honor, I've always been rewarded for my vulnerability. And it's really meaningful. You know, it's like, it's meaningful to know that the world at large, you know, is actually, it's safe to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
It really is safe. And for anybody who feels like, oh, it's not safe to be vulnerable, I'm doing it in front of hundreds of thousands of people all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And the overwhelming response is like, thank you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
You're such a great model for a strong man who can be soft and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the strength actually opens up the ability for the tenderness. Just like that's what actually got my parts to really relax is when I showed up in the fullness of myself, they're like, oh man, I got Aubrey here. Like, I'm good.
That's right.
You know, and so that's it's beautiful to be able to have that fierceness and the tenderness.
You're a wonderful model for many men.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, thank you, Dick. This has been a real pleasure. And thank you everybody for tuning in. We love you. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning into this podcast with Dick Schwartz. I hope you guys enjoyed the ride as you plumbed deep into my own psyche and found out all of the places where I could reach to greater wholeness. So thanks for being on this journey with me. I love you guys, and I'll see you next week.